This is going to be a discussion about journeys and journey stories, which we started on Monday. And if you weren't at the one on Monday or at the film screening last night, just to introduce myself, I'm Kai Carlson Wee, and I've been coming up to Holden my whole life, usually every summer, every other summer. I was lead cook up here in 2007. And spent a year hiking in the mountains and kind of participating in this community. And it's just been a very centering and important piece of my spiritual journey. I really value the opportunity to kind of talk to you and share on your own personal journeys and whatever capacity that might be. So, packets.
Thank you.
Do you need scratch paper and pens?
Yeah, I'm great.
Scratch paper. Pens. Did you, Chuck and Peg, do you need a...
I have one. I can share.
You have a packet? I'll get you a little packet.
Is this the same one from the first year?
Yeah, same one.
Thank you.
No, it's okay. Welcome, come on in.
There's tons of chairs over there.
It's the issue with having this right after dinner, everybody's...
Maybe it's not good.
Okay, yeah.
Fresh paper guy.
Okay, cool.
Thanks a lot.
Did anyone do the homework that was assigned? Anyone remember what the homework was? Yeah, so kind of make a compressed poem version of the stories that we wrote down. So what we talked about in the first day on Monday is how to tell a journey story and how to focus specifically on what instigated that journey in your life. And there's sort of a structure to many journey stories that I outlined a little bit. And it's important to kind of know what those are, just so you can follow along with the way that we're imagining telling our own stories. But typically, in what's called the monomyth, or Joseph Campbell's Hero with a Thousand Faces, anyone familiar with that? If you're not familiar with that, it's an idea that Joseph Campbell came up with, kind of looking at mythologies and religions across many cultures and spiritual practices, and you notice that there was this familiar structure to all these journeys. And he sort of outlined 17 critical points that most of these journey stories touch on. And this covers everything from like stories in the Bible to Star Wars to Lolita to, on the road, stories that we're familiar with that we associate with journey stories, they often follow this structural pattern. And basically what it is there's a protagonist, who is called to quest, okay? And they go out on a journey. So there's a call to quest somewhere over here. What's also called in fiction, in like narrative structure, an inciting incident. So if you are studying, you're studying like screenwriting or you're studying novel narrative form, it's going to be called an inciting incident. But in the journey story narrative arc, it's called the call to quest. This is usually what propels the story forward, and after which the story can never reverse itself and go backwards. So if you think of your own life, this is sort of like going to college, deciding to come up to Holden, whatever kind of propelled that choice in your life, going through major life transitions, like getting married, having a child, that sort of thing. Then the protagonist goes out after this call to quest, and they encounter the unknown. And this is a significant component of all of these archetypal stories, which we're going to be focusing on today. And encountering the unknown, you can imagine as meeting a stranger. You can imagine that as some kind of experience of faith with God. Could be a hike up to, you know, Heart Lake and back, seeing the bear. My dad has seen the bear. He's the Hike House guy right now, and he had a bear encounter that he's talked about at Matins. You can see it in any of those different ways. Sometimes the encounter with the unknown is an encounter with the self, and a piece and aspect of your own psyche, your own personality that you haven't addressed in a significant way. So that's what we're going to be focusing on today, this encounter. And then the rest of the structure is basically a returning to home. And often the story doesn't begin exactly, or doesn't end exactly where it began. It sort of ends askew to where it began, but it usually references or riffs on ideas, themes, narrative components that are set up at the beginning. Okay? So that's just common among all journey stories. And we're going to be focusing on the unknown this time. So what I talked about the first day was that kind of turn that sets out your journey and kind of like instigates it. And the idea of the turn as being a significant component of these stories, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But, so anyone do this homework assignment? Compression of, anyone feel brave enough to share?
I didn't bring it.
Anyone want to talk about just the process, just how that went? Yeah.
I think what I tried to do was like put myself back there and remember what I was thinking and kind of whatever visceral memories I had. And then I just feel like the words are super important, like very specific words. That's where I struggle. Like, how do I find artful, all-encompassing words, you know?
Sure.
But, yeah.
Did the writing of the story out beforehand kind of help with some of the language?
Yeah, completely. Okay. Well, no, actually, sorry to let you finish the question. Not really with the language.
Okay.
But with really identifying the moment.
Okay, right, the moment, that turning point.
For me, it felt like I was really just picking out the key, I mean, like the most important pieces of it that really stuck out.
Yeah.
But just, I mean, some of those, just the sense where it's, you know, whether it was things that you heard or remembered or, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've never written a poem with a story at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like really new to me, so that was pretty fantastic. But it also made me realize all the yammering that I do and the, like, all the things that were like an amazing amount of it didn't matter. I was just like, holy cow, that doesn't matter, and that doesn't really matter either. So it was, that's why I'm still working on it.
Yeah. Well, it is funny how our memories work in recalling these stories.
Mm-hmm.
From our own lives and then like mythological stories or, you know, stories in the Bible. We don't fixate on the whole story at once. We don't fixate on the plot. We fixate on individual images or individual moments, single actions, sometimes character traits. You know, a person had blue hair, and that's kind of what helps the story stay in our mind. So sometimes isolating these turning points help us come up with those kind of crystalline details that stand out and help us remember. Anyone else want to talk about how that went?
Yeah.
I think it's hard for me to think of, like, I have some journeys that I could think about, but either I feel like I'm in the middle of it now and I haven't completed it, so I can't write about it yet, or I can't see all the pieces. Like, it's just a trip, or it's like it's not special with all of those components in it, even though maybe I was changed along the way or something.
Right.
Like, I don't attend to it. I think I don't. It's hard for me to see anything I do as special. Like,
right, totally. Okay. I know what you mean. And sometimes these stories aren't evident to us right away. We know that we were changed, we know that we went through something, but we don't see the narrative form, the narrative structure, and how to put that together. And, you know, telling stories, even the truest, most nonfiction stories, it's still an act of art making. It's an act of the imagination in a lot of ways. Sometimes it's an act of omitting a lot of details. So, like Peg was saying, you cut a lot of the stuff out, the fluff or the unnecessary things, and you can focus on some of these structural components that might be there, but you just don't see them. And again, this is not all stories work like this. Not all stories have to have beginning, middle, end, and have an encounter with the unknown and the transformation. But as you kind of investigate your own stories, you'll notice that there are ways that you can kind of fit them into this mold, the journey stories. I don't want that to feel restrictive, though. Usually, like, using a form like this opens up possibilities that we didn't see were there. Any other thoughts on this process from people that did this?
So the assignment was to write a journey story, and then, since we weren't here, and then use the words and the language in your story to create a poem?
Basically, we just journaled about a journey story that had some kind of narrative arc like this, and then the assignment was to kind of compress it into a poem.
So you could select key words from your, I mean, like, with in my students, I've done poetry with where you just isolate, it could be from a nonfiction text, like, say, we study about Pacific Northwest environment, and then you would highlight words that the kids really loved, that, you know, meant something to them, that were interesting, and then we'd use those words to create a poem.
Yeah, totally.
Is that kind of...
A little bit of what that is. No, the that process is just sort of, we're more comfortable in prose. We're more comfortable kind of telling our stories in prose. And so that process just highlights some words, some images, some moments that when in poetic form kind of can really pop out. So we looked at some examples of poetry in Yeats and stuff like that. But in thinking about the unknown and these encounters with the unknown that we're going to be focusing on today, what do people think about when they hear that? When they think about their own encounters with the unknown in their lives, what comes to mind?
I think it's fear, just with not knowing what's. I mean, which for me are anxiety of not knowing what to expect.
Curiosity.
Say more about that.
I'm drawing a blank. What is it? Where did it come from?
Mm-hmm.
Friend or foe?
Yeah.
God created or devil created? You know, I want answers. I don't want to run away from it.
Right. That need to understand,
mm-hmm.
right? That need to know what's out there.
Right.
a challenge or exploration of the unknown.
Yeah.
As a challenge, as an adventure, exploration.
Yeah, that sort of Viking mentality we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, for me, it would be more of an encounter with the self and inner transformation, like something, but something that happened outside that then, you know, changed my way of being and thinking.
Right.
In a dramatic way.
Right.
I think of it as something intriguing or exciting, like when you're going out for a new venture, I personally feel like I'm looking for what's going to surface, what's going to happen, exciting.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. There's anticipation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's surprise.
Right. I've been thinking about the Tolstoy quote you gave us last time. And either because you wrote so effectively and what like the theme for tonight was going to be, or because I'm slow and it took me like 2 days to get it. But like I was thinking about sometimes you go on a journey and you encounter the unknown in a journey.
Right.
But when a stranger comes to you, it's like the unknown is coming to your midst. And so sometimes our encounters with the stranger is the unknown coming close to us.
Right.
And it's transformative.
Right. Yeah, so we talked a little bit about the Tolstoy quote that's on the packet at the beginning, and that is what I want to like dig into today.
Yeah.
This idea of otherness and why it's why we're intrigued by otherness and why that's a necessary component of most journey stories, and why it's also the bridge toward empathy and broadening our understanding of the world and our place in it. So just to kind of kick this off, I want to tell a little story. This is what I did on Monday too. It's a story about my camera. And Chuck and Peg have heard this story already. But I was recently in Paris, and I love taking photos when I travel, like so many people do. But I have this old film camera that I've had for many years, Nikon F3. Anyone ever seen this or know this one? This one's from 1980, and so it's older than I am. But it uses film, takes great photos, and they're kind of hard to come by in like fully functioning version now, because they're just getting older, but they're really dependable and sturdy cameras. Anyway, I've been taking photos with this for 8 years or so. And while I was in Paris, I had it stolen. And it was just one of these kind of petty thievery things, but I was sitting down in this canal in the 11th arrondissement, they say, is that right? I had my laptop bag next to me, and I had my camera sitting right next to that, and I was writing poetry, just trying to come up with some imagery or something, and this guy came up to me and sat down next to me and said, "Hey, do you want to, you know, buy some weed?" And I think he thought, because I had long hair, I was like, you know, buy weed. And I was like, "Oh no, that's okay, I'm fine. You know, I'm from California where it's legal, so cool interaction." He kind of tried to talk to me for a little bit, but I was trying to write my poetry and I was kind of ignoring him. And he's like, "All right, well, can I have a cigarette off of you?" I said, "Sure," and I gave him a cigarette. And then he left me alone. And my stuff was sitting next to me, and I checked, and my stuff was all still there, and I thought, you know, it was just a random interaction. And then he came back a couple minutes later, smoking the cigarette that I had given him, and he sat down again, and he said, "Hey, do you know what hashish is? Do you want to buy some hashish off me?" And I was like, "Yeah, I know what that is. I don't want to buy any." And he pulled out this block of hashish that he had in his pocket, and he kind of held it up to me, And I was like, no, I'm not interested. And then he bit into it. And he was trying to show me that it was high quality or something. And I must have turned my head to look at him do this for about 5 seconds. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to buy any of that. And then he left, and I looked over, and my camera bag was gone. And I didn't hear anyone come up. I knew immediately what had happened. I stand up and look around, and there were probably like 20 people around that could have been, you know, could have done it, but nobody was shuffling away with the bag. It didn't look like anyone was acting weird, and I just had no clue who it was, and it's just professional thievery. So I went to this guy and I said, look, I know you're working with somebody and you stole my camera. Why don't you just go get the camera, I'll pay you for it, and we can like skip this whole situation of like, you know, you having to sell it somewhere and then getting not that much money and all this stuff. And suddenly his English was much worse than it had been before, and he started saying, I don't know, I just sell weed, you know, and whatever. And I realized that there wasn't really anything I could do. And so we filed a police report. They said, well, not likely that you're going to see the camera again. I went to all the camera stores that I thought maybe this would have been resold at, and they hadn't seen it, and you know, that kind of thing. And so then I started looking online to try to replace it on Craigslist, but that was also difficult. A lot of the cameras had scratches and that kind of thing. So I was mainly bummed out because I lost photos, you know, I lost some photos, and I was still traveling, and I was going to New York next, and the street photos in New York are like the best, and I love taking street photography there. So I just was lamenting this thought of being in New York without my camera. And we flew back to New York, and the first day we were getting some ice cream at this ice cream shop in Brooklyn, and this guy walks in who had some tattoos on him, and he had an F3 over his shoulder, the same camera. And I was like, oh great, you know, there's a person with an F3 taking a bunch of photos, having a great time, and I'm missing my camera. And when we got out of the line, walked by him and said, hey, is that an F3? And he said, yeah. And I was like, how do you like it? And he's like, oh, I love this camera, but I'm traveling right now, and I actually have to sell it, so I'm selling it to this camera store tomorrow for $300, which is really cheap for this camera. And I was like, huh, interesting. And I was like, because I was just in Paris, and I had this camera stolen off of me, and you know, it's been one of my favorite, you know, cameras that I've had over the years. And I was like, where are you from? And he was like, I'm from Paris. So there was this weird connection. And I almost had this feeling like he was the guy, you know. Somehow I was running into him in Brooklyn now. But I said, I might just buy that off of you if you don't mind. Like, and he was like, yeah, that sounds great. And I was like, is it working? And he's like, yeah, I actually just did a photo shoot for Vogue last week. I'm a professional photographer and should be working well. So I bought this camera off this guy, and he gave me extra lenses, gave me this case, and then I was able to shoot, you know, street photography in New York and bring this camera up here, and I've been shooting photos around the village. You know, this guy wasn't an angel sent from God to give me back my F3 that I lost. But there was this feeling of serendipity to the whole thing, and there was this feeling of, you know, if I wouldn't have gotten this camera stolen, I wouldn't have really had eyes to see this situation and meet this person and interact with him in this way. And now we're like friends on Instagram, and we're liking each other's photos and stuff and following each other. It was just a reminder to me of like the strange encounters that you have traveling, and sometimes a stranger or an encounter with the unknown kind of operates in a negative way, but sometimes it operates in this kind of positive way also. But I want us to think just a little bit about the Tolstoy quote that was mentioned. You can see this on the packet. And Tolstoy said, "All great literature is one of two stories." I don't know why I'm even writing this down because you have it in front of you, but it feels more official this way. A person.
There's black on that.
A person goes on a journey. Or a stranger comes to town. So it's kind of a bold statement for any writer to make. But assuming that Tolstoy knows a little bit about novel writing, what does he mean by this?
Something out of the ordinary. Either you're going somewhere or something's coming to you that's different and it's not just your daily routine.
Right. Shaking things up.
Something unexpected or unknown.
Yeah. Right.
Seems like a pretty novel idea and almost kind of cheapens the art form. But maybe it's also a challenge to you know, have the right mix of other ingredients to mask the simplicity of that archetype.
Sure.
So yeah. That you do make it great. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there needs to be more ingredients than just this, but you know, foundationally speaking, he's talking about change, right? Mm-hmm. He's talking about shifting things up, shaking things up. And he could just change this to be like, all great literature is about change. Something has to change, right? But there's a couple other components here that are important. Yeah.
People and place.
Yep.
People and what?
People and place, yeah. She said.
A change of context.
Yeah.
So either for the person who's doing the journeying or how a stranger comes and it helps you to see your context differently. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm stuck on the word great, because the stories that resonate like with lots of people and with us are these stories. So rather than kind of belittling it, I feel like it's like these are the stories that are most attractive to us. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he isolates this as journey stories, as the great literature or whatever. And that can be argued with, but when you think back to a lot of the books that you love, a lot of them have these journeys at the heart. Sometimes it's a road trip, an adventure story, you know, Moby Dick or something like that. Sometimes it's more inner transformation that's taking place. But are these stories that different? Person goes on a journey or a stranger comes to town.
Same what? Story, it just depends on your perspective.
Right. That's the joke with this idea. Is, you know, if you're the person going out and telling your story and you're the protagonist,
yeah.
Then that's the story that you tell. But if you are viewing the protagonist enter on that or go through that journey, then you're watching a Stranger Comes to Town version of the same story, right? It's just which perspective you see it from.
One sounds intentional and the other sounds accidental.
Yeah, well, yeah, one the, you know, the agent of change is something else affecting affecting you or affecting the town or the place.
Right.
And, yeah.
It seems to me if I am on a journey, no matter whether it's internal or whether or not I'm actually physically moving someplace, that there's some intention in it.
Right.
If a stranger comes to town, that to me is just accidents.
Right.
An accident.
Well, you could view it that way. But we are given these opportunities, I think, all the time to change and to encounter the unknown and to participate in this journey or see it in that narrative way. It's just we often focus our journey stories on these moments when we take agency and we go out and we do these things, right? But if we're keeping our eyes peeled and thinking about it, you'll notice that every day, all the time, different agents are coming into your life that are offering you this kind of change and offering you these kinds of methods to transform. It's just that we get stuck in our routines, you know, we get used to the familiar, and we forget to start letting things enter our lives, right? So in a way, you're right, there's a difference there, but I also think that some of that is just because we quit trying to see that this is always happening. So let's look at the poems a little bit that we have in the packet and see how some writers are allowing change into their lives. Let's start with A Blessing by James Wright. Anyone know this poem? Or poet? One of James Wright's famous poems, if you haven't read this before, it's a good one, so you're in for a treat. A Blessing. Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bound softly forth on the grass, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darkened with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture where they have been grazing all day alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white, her mane falls wild on her forehead, and the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear that is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom.
I could just see that.
Mm-hmm.
I could just visualize that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very visual poem. Paints a picture.
Is it?
It's a transformation.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Yeah. It's a little melodramatic at the end, but, you know, also kind of lovely. So in thinking about these encounters and these journey stories, how is this poem enacting some of that?
as your encounter with a stranger?
Could be.
I like that it's an encounter with nature or like an animal.
Yeah.
Because I think even as you're framing this up, I was just thinking of just how we encounter one another as humans. Mm-hmm. So I like this poem right after that.
Yeah.
Because it's other encounters that bring this presence.
I've been on that road to Rochester.
Oh, really?
Often.
Is that, what interstate is that?
Well,
is
it's, it, what is it,
52?
Okay.
And I've been on that, and I've never seen this. But then I was never looking for it either. I was hightailing it to La Crosse or hightailing it to Minneapolis. And I think of how often, because I'm intentional about where I'm going, that some of these other things I just...
Right.
Don't see.
Right. So, any other thoughts? So this poem is kind of set in the middle of an action of a moment. We assume that the reason that they're pulling over to the side of the road is before the poem. You know, that's sort of maybe the inciting incident that we're not aware of. Maybe he's searching for something that we don't know about. But we get this scene where just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bounds softly forth on the grass. Da-da-da-da-da, we step over the barbed wire into the pasture, right? What's significant about that?
Kind of moves through a barrier, or it's drawing him that he has obstacles in front of him that he can still overcome.
Exactly. That's how we know that there's an encounter with the unknown, right? He has to cross a threshold. He has to go over the barbed wire. This isn't something that he can just access easily any given day. And it's a little dangerous too, barbed wire. You know, there's that element.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
not allowed.
Yeah, it's not just a wooden fence.
It's sort of tangled, but I work with audio, and I was just listening to something that was exploring how your inner thoughts are portrayed in an audio piece.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's like an echoey, you know, thing.
Yep.
And I just, it has me thinking about that in every poem you read and encounters with the unknown. It's like, what does that voice sound like in your head, you know, as you are making the decision or receiving something? You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, yeah. You mean when you're kind of hearing words and you're kind of jotting things down?
Or in that moment where you... where you do something different, where you make a different decision, where something hits you in a different way.
Uh-huh.
Like, what does that actually sound like inside your foot?
Right, right.
I just think that's...
It's beautiful thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's lovely. For him, maybe it's blossoming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? Maybe it's flowers erupting from buds in a tree. Yeah.
For me, I was drawn to the ponies, and I feel like they are the example of what to do when unknown comes in. So.
Yeah. They darken with kindness.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what would my life be like when something unknown comes to me, if that was my response?
Right. That's another really good thing to think about. They're, you know, they love each other, they show love, they kind of welcome this person into their home. They get comfortable, they're back at home. And clearly this person is in need of some contact, some love that they're not able to receive right now. And they see that projected in these ponies, and they find that in this encounter.
I read it as a singular person doing that too, and then it's... noticed we, so there's a partner with the person doing this.
Right. Yep, and I don't know if it's their relationship that's sort of being examined in the metaphor, or why, we don't know. But that is the component. There's an intimacy inherent in all the different aspects. So this brings up one of the things that this encounter with the unknown in these stories always produces, or often produces, and that's transformation. So in this story structure, encounters with the unknown have to occur in order for transformation to occur. And transformation has to occur before there's a return home. And the return we'll talk about on Friday, but the return is a little more complicated than just a return. It's often a broadening of communal awareness and communal consciousness, and a movement from the I perspective to the we. But there always has to be that moment of transformation first. And like we mentioned on Monday, or Tuesday, or Monday, if there's not that, then you get Seinfeld. Which is fine. Nothing changes. Let's look at Wild Geese. By Mary Oliver. And this is another version of a journey poem. This one is more of an internal journey. But you can see how an encounter with otherness affects what the speaker comes to. Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert pretending. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. So you might have heard this one before, but how does this poem function in a similar way?
I like the line, tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine.
Yeah.
There's an encounter there and then space for an exchange.
Yeah, exactly. There's a bridging of the barbed wire, right?
It feels like somebody who's gone through a transformation inviting someone else to enter into a transformation.
Yeah.
The encounter, or encounters in life, can be harsh or exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kai, you talked on Monday about woundedness somehow being connected to the transformation sometimes. It feels like there's a sense of like woundedness or the despair
right. He
mentioned at the center of this. Is there a connection there?
Yeah, I think so. I think, this speaker is trying to relieve themselves or relieve others of a kind of shame or guilt from the past. at having to always be a certain way, always having to perform, always having to hold some standard up to themselves. And, you know, in thinking about Christianity and, you know, growing up in churches, we definitely feel this a lot, right? Yeah. There's this pressure to always be a good Christian and, you know, go to church every Sunday and do the right thing. And this poem is not saying do bad things. This poem is just saying life is a little more complicated than that sometimes, and often it's necessary to accept ourselves, you know. And I think the way that she gets there is by allowing herself to kind of bridge that gap of empathy, of saying, look, I'll tell you about my stuff, you tell me about your stuff, right? But there's also this natural world that is sort of allowing that to happen, right? And while we do this and operate in this human world of shame, guilt, and blame and stuff, the world goes on, and, you know, the geese are flying and things are just working on a natural order out there. Mm. And I think that's what allows her the feeling of relief in the end. And this idea of the family of things I really like, you know, it's not just humans, it's the whole family. And I think that's, James Wright is trying to get at some of that too in that poem. That's partly why maybe it's not a human in the field that he's encountering. All right, let's look at one more poem, and then we're going to go on a little adventure, a little journey out into the village. So, yeah, let's look at Let Evening Come. And this is sort of a stranger comes to town poem as opposed to a person goes on a journey poem, and you can kind of see how that works. Let evening come. Let the light of late afternoon shine through chinks in the barn, moving up the bales as the sun moves down. Let the cricket take up chafing as a woman takes up her needles and her yarn. Let evening come. Let dew collect on the hoe abandoned in long grass. Let the stars appear and the moon disclose her silver horn. Let the fox go back to its sandy den. Let the wind die down. Let the shed go black inside. Let evening come. To the bottle in the ditch, to the scoop in the oats, to air in the lung, let evening come. Let it come as it will. And don't be afraid. God does not leave us comfortless, so let evening come. So, again, sort of a poem about, it's kind of a litany, kind of the allowance of presence of the unknown to come into your life. But we see that kind of from that different perspective of the light coming in, right? So what I want us to do, and we're going to take maybe, we'll meet back at the 12, at 7. So if we could get back by 7, that would be great. What I want you to do is I want you to go out into the village with your scratch paper and your pen and have some encounter with the unknown, okay? Whatever that means to you. Hopefully not. It's not an encounter with the bear.
We'll just have one of those today.
Oh, you did. So you can write about that if you want. That's an exciting encounter. Maybe, hopefully. And but it could be, you know, your encounter with the divine, your encounter with some of the things that you've thought about this week, just whatever represents the unknown to you right now. Could also challenge you to talk to somebody out in the village that you haven't met before and just say hi and see if that encounter inspires anything. But try to just have a little encounter and then write about it, and then we'll come back and share what we wrote. And there's no pressure to share, just only if you feel like it.
So are we writing in more poetry form?
You can write this however you want. Just if you want to write poetry form, that's okay. If not, just write about an encounter.
Cool.
Yeah. There's also manure kind of space.
Yeah. It's a nice plant. It's compost.
On the grass. So
that's the compost.
That's the smell. And, that could be part of your unknown.
Unknown smell.
That's fire.
Oh.
Oh yeah, no worries.
So we've got about 15 minutes.
Yep.
James Wright.
Oh, really?
A freshman in college.
Oh, cool.
I don't know anything about poetry,
yeah,
or how to interpret it, or so it's kind of way over my head, but
yeah.
As an older adult now and reading poetry, and thinking better, it's,
yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah,
to reread him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, James Wright, you know, from the Midwest. Mm-hmm. He's always sort of one of the poets that I turn to, and Robert Bly, and
mm-hmm. Yeah, they're friends, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, they're buddies, and wrote a lot about, you know, fields and Midwestern scenery and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and Native American.
Yeah,
Indians.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So where did you go to school?
Gustavus.
Oh yeah, cool. Awesome. Yeah, I went to U of M. So.
Okay, yeah. Well, and he was a teacher at the U of M, I believe,
yeah,
you know, back in the day.
Yeah, when he was going through an alcoholic phase. I think he didn't have the best time there, but yeah.
earlier today. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
And
that's
it was
fine.
Amazing, so I had to write about it.
All right.
Okay.
Can't wait.
Okay.
should be in the crowd chair.
Alright, well, people can kind of trickle in if they're still on their way. They got caught up in the unknown a little too much. But anyone, I'm just curious what people wrote about. Did anyone write about the fertilizer?
I thought about it until somebody said it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm warning you that, you know, that might. Anyone write about nature? Yeah. Anyone write about the bear? Oh, that's what I wrote about too.
There was just a bear?
No. It was from a couple days ago, but still something that, you know, memorable.
I wrote about the deer.
Oh, cool. Right out here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nobody will believe that when I go back to Minneapolis.
Right. I know. It gets so boring after a little while up here. Oh, it's another deer. Another beautiful fawn, like, frolicking in the ferns. No big deal. But, yeah, it's kind of magical. What about inner kind of unknowns? Yeah. Spiritual kind of unknowns. Mm-hmm. Anyone feel like sharing? Yeah, all right.
Okay, this is called Black Bear Encounter. Uh-huh. And this was just this afternoon.
Yeah.
2.5 hour hike up Railroad Creek Valley with wife. Right here. Met day hikers coming down trail saying, "We just encountered a bear." I said, "Where?" She said, about 5 minutes up the Holden Lake Trail. This was the call to quest, or the inciting incident. I chose to change our plans of just hiking along Railroad Creek Valley and to go into the unknown up the Holden Lake Trail instead. The quest was for the chance to see a bear in the wild. About 15-20 minutes up the Holden Lake Trail, I spotted the bear 30 to 40 feet just above the trail. We stopped and observed the bear moving slightly away and eating berries and looking out towards the trail. The transformation was seeing Holden as an even more special place. The closest encounter with a black bear in 33 years in Washington's outdoors for me, and an even greater desire to come back, inspired me to maybe come back to lead naturalist hikes out of Holden.
Nice. Cool.
Yay! Cool. Do you want to hear my perspective?
Yeah.
Like the Japanese filmmaker of the same incident but different perspectives.
Right. Yeah. Wong Kar-wai.
Who?
Oh no, that's not. He's Korean.
Is that Kurosawa? Or...
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, black bear encounter. Let's hike to Holden Lake, my husband said. Well, let's hike part of the way, I said. We marveled at the purple penstemon hugging the side of the trail, sat next to the thick bark of the Douglas fir tree, smelled the sticky sap of a white bark pine cone. We saw a bear heading down the trail from Holden Lake, some hikers said. Let's go, my husband said.
I'm not sure we should, I said. I walked with trepidation. My husband stepped lightly with excitement and anticipation. The black bear emerged on the side of the trail. We stopped. My husband leaned in with joy. I stepped back in fear. The bear nonchalantly munched on ripe red thimbleberries with a smile.
That's
great. I swear, I saw him smiling. That was transformational for me.
Right, exactly.
He didn't care for me.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, okay, give up the fear.
Yeah. I wish we could have all just encountered a bear and see how we all did different things. Right about it.
Yeah.
That was cool.
A path on yet unknown. Out into the woods, on a path yet unknown, greeted by a deer, cautiously moving into the human world, stepping gracefully and pausing. Is it safe to come? I move, she stops, and a silent dance ensues. Excited children chase. She escapes into the ferns. I wait for her return. Mosquitoes buzz and bite. Will she return? She ventures out again, cautiously on limber legs. Another child chases, eliciting a hasty retreat into the safety of the known. Disappointed, I itch.
I like that. You can see the boundary there, right? The ferns. And you can see the boundary here, the trail, Holden Lake Trail. That crossover is what allows these interactions to go down. It's cool. Yeah?
I'll be happy to read.
Yeah.
I've entitled it, so there's traveling alone on a rocky path, I'm a step to the side. Two logs block the way. Sawn, they are not placed, they are placed, not fallen, spanning a deep hole. A traveler ahead of me thought to protect me. I'm not as alone as I thought.
Mm. I like that. Snaps for that. Yeah, I like that. The unknown character out there, the other hiker. Yeah?
I walked a short walk to the bridge over Railway Creek. I know the path, and I long for a place to sit and view the spectacular beauty of this place and the flowing of the water and the snow-clad mountains. I wanted to paint a picture of what I experienced there. I wanted a picture that I could take home with me. I also was filled with the unknown. I'm recovering from a broken leg, and I don't know my limits. Physical experience today, but I tried it anyway. I don't know where the best place is to sit up and meditate or paint. The picture emerged for me in my human viewfinder. It was calling me to a place close to the water on some large rocks. I managed to go there and stumble onto the rocks and sit down and take out my paint set to begin to paint. I had experienced risk-taking before in my life, and when I was young, climbing on such rocks would be so automatic, so easy, so unthinkable. But it was offset today for my weak, elderly body. I found and sat down on that rock, yes. I sat down to meditate, and the only sound I heard was the rushing water. But I decided to get up. I was filled with terror. I could hardly stand. I almost lost my balance. And actually, pictures went through my mind of myself slipping on the rocks and falling into the water. Nobody was there to see me. I felt my vulnerability, and I went Well, I would just end up to say, I did get back on my feet, and I walked slowly back into the village, and I thought, why was such a beautiful day? Such a beautiful day filled with thoughts of my own death and vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's lovely. Thank you for sharing that.
Happy.
At the beginning of that, you said, I wish I had a picture to bring home with this, you know, and that might have been the picture.
But I did paint a picture.
This is my favorite. Oh, you did as well. Okay, so you got two.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
This is called Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. I'm getting close. What? Now I'm moving farther away. Is this really progress? I can't see how this journey will go, or how exactly I'll get there. All I can do is be present to each step, trust that each twist and turn is necessary, that I will arrive, that much is sure.
Nice. Yeah, the labyrinth itself is just such a metaphor for the inner journey. You never really get anywhere, you just go around and around. But hopefully you're changed in some way by the meditation.
Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking of it as, I mean, it could be lots of different metaphors, but for me it was like life, and that my journey was the journey, and eventually it would end. So actually that's why I decided to share it, because for me I was like, oh, one way or the other.
Yep.
I'll get there. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have another bear encounter.
Okay. All right.
It's like a bear within a bear encounter. I met the bear near the ballpark, a sweet morning by the hikers who passed by. He scratched the tree, focused and forceful. In that moment, 10:31 a.m., it did not matter that I stood frozen, reflecting upon Herzog's film Grizzly Man, in which a man meets his demise to the very bear he loves, even worships, in the Alaskan wilderness. In calmness, I think about all those times that my brother Luke and I would climb and play basketball on the third level of the village with the 50s diner seats and rusty mine nails. The ball would go over the edge, down the bank, into a seemingly endless tangle of brush and forest. We donated so many basketballs to the mountain that way. One time we saw a bear, a ball had gone over the edge, Luke attempting a three throw to win over our scrimmage. It missed the basket entirely. Luke went to find the ball, and there the bear was, calm. Luke asked if we should sing a song. The bear seemed to sense us, scrounging the mountainside. We paused, barely breathing, and the bear, undisturbed, kept going into the darkness of the slope, back to where it came, the game completely forgotten.
I like that. I like how it was a missed shot that allowed the bear, or the ball, to go down and the bear encounter to happen.
I love the moving the balls and losing the balls into the mountainside. I picture this field of balls.
There used to be a lot of stuff up there, tailings, for many years of multiple things. Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah.
I was trying to make mine funny.
That's okay.
A woman walks down the gravel path through the trees around the bend toward the creek. I turn around and climb the porch steps to get a bigger, broader view of the village. My head moves from left to right, and my eyes settle on the path again. Walking slowly up from the creek toward my porch is a gentle brown deer, but I know it's really the woman. I just thought it was funny, like, you can kind of believe, I don't know.
Yeah.
A transformational moment could just be in your head.
Totally. And it's valid that way. You know, I think a lot of the way we narrate our stories and a lot of the way we see these encounters, sometimes are fictional in a way, you know. But it's not so much what happens, it It's just that it changes us that's the important piece. Mm-hmm. And however you get there, I don't know if it matters. You know, James Wright dramatized that moment and felt like a tree bursting into blossom, but maybe a different day it wouldn't have been that important of an encounter. We wouldn't have been open to it. We just don't know. But we're kind of out of time. What I'm going to do is give you a challenge, though. This is what I did on Monday, and I'm going to do it again. What I want you to do for homework, you don't have to bring it in on Friday, but try to do this by yourself a little bit to practice this idea. Part of the main thing that we learn from these journey stories is, again, not just our own achievement or our own transformation, but the communal transformation. The ability of a community to tell its story, to identify itself, and to move forward with empathy. And so what I want you to do to practice this a little bit is try to retell this journey story that you just told, the encounter with the unknown, from the stranger comes to town perspective. So if you wrote about the bear, try to imagine yourself as the bear. If you wrote about the deer, try to imagine the deer. If you wrote about the presence of a higher power, try to imagine. You don't have to try to personify God, but you know, imagine a satellite or imagine an aerial view or imagine something outside yourself looking at you passing through. So that's the challenge, but thank you all for being here and for kind of participating today. And thanks for the conversation. It's really fun to hear all this. Hopefully we keep the bear theme going without more significant incidents.